This is One-on-One with Mitch LaFon, the podcast where the rockers talk, part of the Talking Metal Digital Podcasting Network. Now, here's your host, Mitch LaFon.
Welcome to another episode of One-on-One with Mitch LaFon. I am your host, Mitch LaFon, and this week I've got two incredible guests. Rob Halford, the metal god of Judas Priest, talking about Redeemer of Souls, their latest album, and of course their upcoming tour. And then I've got King Diamond, of course, of Merciful Fate and King Diamond fame, talking about his new three-album deal. Before we get into that, let me just remind you that this episode of One-on-One is brought to you by Melodic Rock Fest 4, taking place October 3rd and 4th in Arlington Heights, Illinois, and featuring performances by Mitch Malloy, Heaven's Edge, Seventh Heaven, and more. Head over to Melodic Rock Fest 4. You know what? I won't keep you. Let's get right into this. Let us listen to the Metal God. Here is Rob Halford talking about Redeemer of Souls and more. Take it away. Hi, Rob. How are you doing?
Thank you, Sophia. Hello, Mitch.
Pleasure to speak with you again. It's been a while.
Nice to speak with you once more. Yeah, good to catch up with you on all things that are happening in the priest world right now.
Yeah, and it's very exciting because you're coming over to Montreal in October.
We're getting ready to pack the suitcase and lock the house again and get on the plane and the tour buses and come and see you guys once more. We're excited, looking forward to coming to that part of the world again.
Yeah, so talk about this tour. You know, as we get older, sometimes it gets a little harder. I know for me it gets a little harder to get my days going.
Yeah.
How has touring changed for you? How do you sort of keep up with the rigors of the road?
You know, it's amazing. I'm sure many musicians will tell you this. No matter what challenges you're facing on the day of a show, you know, the traveling that's involved and just all the preparation, once those lights go down and the fans start screaming and yelling, you feel like $1 million, you know. Yeah. It's just a remarkable thing that happens to you. So that'll be the same for us in Priest. We've been going out and playing metal for 40 years this year, Mitch, as you know. It's our 40th anniversary, and you know, I can flip my mind back to some of those very, very early shows that we would do here in the UK. You know, we'd go to Birmingham Town Hall or Newcastle City Hall or up to Inverness, or all of these different venues in the UK, and the experience hasn't really changed that much. You're doing the same type of metal ritual, if you will.
Right.
And it really is extraordinary that 40 years later, due to the incredible support that the fans have been giving us for so long, we're able to go ahead and tour for this really special one, the 40th year, and with Redeemer of Souls.
Yeah, Redeemer of Souls is a great album. So let's ask it, you know, let's talk about that. 6 years since the last one, Nostradamus. Why that space of 6 years? Normally you kept saying to 2 years, 3 years. Why six on this one?
Well, let me think. I'm going to flip my mind back. We released Nostradamus. We did an extensive Nostradamus world tour,
right,
which I think took about 18 months.
Right.
Then we did the British Steel tour that I think was exclusively in America.
Right.
Right after that was some of the early preparations for the material for Redeemer of Souls, coupled with the Epitaph tour, as it turned out. And of course, then KK retired. We forged ahead and did the Epitaph tour, which again was almost 18 months. So if we look at the calendar, the actual writing process for putting Redeemer of Souls together, you know, writing pre-production and then full studio post-production, it was only about 18 months really, Mitch, which is, you know, going at a fair rate of speed, considering it was our umpteenth studio album.
And 17th, of course, actually.
Yeah, 17. Thank you. Well, you would know, being a Priest fan, you've got a better grasp of things than I do. But yeah, so you know, it came together relatively quickly, especially having Richie on board. There was this massive surge of enthusiasm and energy and the excitement that we took back with us home from the fans from the Epitaph tour. So, yeah, it was 6 years from point to point, but we were extremely busy during those 6 years, for sure.
Yeah, very true. What keeps you making new music? I mean, you're at a point, like you said, 40 years. You could certainly go play the arenas and just make a greatest hits package of all the catalog stuff. What keeps you motivated to come up with? I mean, you look at this one, there's, you know, if you look at the bonus disc, there's 18 songs. That's a lot of work.
Yeah. It's just being inspired by all the great things that go on around you. We're all metalheads. We're all metal fans in Priest. We love to see what's happening out there in the metal world. So, you know, I had an opportunity not too long ago to do something with the guys from Five Finger Death Punch. And, you know, checking out all of the other new bands, Avenged Sevenfold, tons and tons of bands. It gives me personally a buzz, you know. And I think when you still have the creative juices, because that's what it's all about. You really want to write another metal song, you know. You when you're all feeling that way, especially the trio as it stands now of Glenn and Richie and myself, why stop it? You know, if you feel like you want to go in there and see what you can do again, then certainly do it. But this was an extraordinary moment for us with Richie, and again, we can't overstate his importance at this point in the band's career, that there's a whole different kind of surge going on here. So I'm optimistic. I think there will definitely be another Priest album.
Oh, that's great.
When we've completed the work for the Redeemer of Souls tour, which is going to be quite extensive into next year, then I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if we get ready to do another one.
Oh, that would be great. Now, you know, you mentioned Avenged Sevenfold. You mentioned Five Finger Death Punch.
Yeah.
You know, Gene Simmons recently said that rock is dead. Do you think that?
No, I've heard that statement a number of times through the decades that I've been in metal. I don't think it is. I think it's absolutely in incredible shape right now. Never been stronger. I think we're surrounded constantly by new talent and, you know, the enthusiasm that surges from new bands of all kinds keeps rock alive and strong, and I think it'll always be that way. So for me, when I, you know, check out the metal sites that I do every day, I check about a dozen metal sites from different places around the world. I see the strength and the power there, and it's tremendously exciting. It's a different world now, for sure, in terms of the way the industry side of the business works. That is a whole new perspective compared to how it was, you know, even 20 years ago with the advent of the internet, which, you know, created an enormous amount of a change of perspective. It affected everybody in a great way. So what I'm saying is, you know, rock isn't dead. It's alive, it's thriving, and it's exciting.
Now, speaking of exciting rock, years ago you did an album called Voyeurs 2.
Yeah.
And I recently interviewed John Five, and he said, you know, it was a great guitar-driven metal album. It sounded fantastic. And then we sent it off to Trent Reznor, and he stripped all the guitars, and he wishes that it got re-released in that original form. What do you take of that album? Is John right? Was it a power?
I love John. He's a fantastic guitar player. He's a dear friend of mine, and I'm really thrilled to see the things that he's doing these days. And he's had a new record that's just come out, which is extraordinary. He's an amazing talent. When we put that two project together, it was very raw. It was very stripped down. It did have some hard rock, almost metal elements to it. But this is the great adventure that we have in music. When I bumped into Trent Reznor, I don't even think that's the right word. I was in New Orleans for one Mardi Gras, and a friend of mine was driving me around, and we passed Trent's studio and suggested I knocked on the door, and that's when I met Brave Ogilvy. And I've got the cassette with me and played the demos to Trent, who I've always admired. I think that man's extraordinary. Something came out of it, you know. I was listening to that two record for the first time in years, just recently. And much like a lot of Trent's work, you know, and a lot of work that I do with Priest, it kind of stands the test of time, and it still sounds fresh and exciting. But I know what Johnny's saying, and I'm trying to track down the original tapes. It's kind of difficult because a lot of years have gone by since then. But if ever we get a chance to maybe do a re-release of the original two material, I think it would be quite cool to check it out and see how it feels in today's world.
Yeah, I would love to hear that. Now, also, you know, you had a very successful career with the Halford Band. No release has come out since about 2010, 2011. Are you still a solo artist, or have you decided, okay, Priest is it?
No, I'm still curious about other things that can be made in music. That's just my nature as a musician. I think that if you have a sense of what could happen if you hooked up with this person or that person, then why stop yourself? Having said that, as I've always said, Priest is the love of my life in metal, and I get a lot of things that I want as a metal musician from this band, and I think you can hear that roaring from Redeemer of Souls. But I'm interested, you know, and as I've always said again, Priest comes first for me. And when time allows, as I'm sure it will in the not too distant future, I'll see what else I can do in the solo world.
Yeah, because I'm very much interested in seeing what you do, because Resurrection was a fantastic album. When you left Priest in 91, did you feel that was it? And if not, why didn't you just say, listen, guys, let's just take 2 years off, go to the Bahamas, sit in the sun? Why did it have to get to the point where you had to leave?
Well, firstly, I can't remember the last time I took a vacation. My vacation is coming home to here in the UK, or my place in Phoenix. Yeah, you know, that thing about hindsight and everything else. Priest was going through an extraordinary time in the early 90s. The band had been working literally nonstop from those very first releases. And you could suggest that, yeah, if we'd have all taken a hiatus of sorts, things might have turned out differently. But, hey, that's life, you know. Okay. Life isn't a smooth journey. I'd never wanted a smooth journey in life. I just wanted all the craziness that comes with it. And so I look back at that time, and it was extreme. It was a bit dangerous. But, again, I think something good came out of it from my perspective. Priest forged ahead with my good friend Tim Ripper Owens. He was holding the mic and doing a fantastic job. Hey, I'm not the first guy that stepped out of the band and done something of that nature. It was fulfilling, but I tell you what it did kind of bring home to me was just how much I valued and how much I needed Judas Priest in my life. I missed all my bandmates. I just missed all of that really tight type of experience that you have with each other when you're in a band, especially a band of the nature of Judas Priest. So I kind of went for a walk and did my stuff, and then was eager to find a way to come back. And of course, it's been suggested that the Resurrection album was the bridge back to the world of Priest, you know. And so when that opportunity arose and we were able to reform at that particular time, it was a tremendous tremendous feeling from everybody, from everybody in the band at the time, and of course, most importantly, the fans again, who've stood with us, you know, old Priest fans, new Priest fans, they've all been with us every step of the way, supporting us, and so it was just a fantastic feeling to be regrouped again.
Yeah, you know, absolutely fantastic. You know, I started the interview asking about the rigors of the road.
Yeah.
In terms of your voice, are there concerns as you get older? Do you have to do things differently? Do you have to sit around in a steam bath or not talk to people for 2 days? how do you protect your voice? I mean, it's a very unique and special voice.
Yeah, I think it's the same for everybody again. You know, my voice is 40 years on in metal. I'd like to feel that what I'm trying to do on Redeemer of Souls is the best examples of my abilities right now. And it's still pretty, it's pretty, you know, I'm going to places that I still can go to. I'm not having to kind of pull back in any areas, any dimensions. I get frustrated. I freely admit that I wish I could do the stuff that I could do when I was laying down the tracks in, you know, 1974, mm-hmm. 75, but that's just ridiculous. I don't think any singer can re-qualify those moments again. So you go out and you do your best, you know. And we've just been jamming here in the UK, rehearsing the set list. It sounds unbelievable. The new material especially is just roaring out of the band. It's just been a very easy transition from the Redeemer of Souls songs on record into a live performance, which is great. And then the classics, you know, Living After Midnight, Breaking the Law, Another Thing Coming. These are the things that are part of Priest's heritage. And even though we have this massive back catalogue of songs, if we didn't come out and play these really important, significant moments of Priest's history, then I think our fans would be disappointed. So this upcoming tour is our best attempt to kind of cover a lot of ground again, play the new stuff, play the classics, and give everybody a good night out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And of course, if it ended all today, how would you qualify Priest's career?
I will never answer a question like that, because the band is absolutely on fire right now.
It is,
and so that's the thrill for me, that this band is still able to go out and put on the best metal shows ever, with all the same intensity, passion, and energy that we've always had, and the thrill is still alive and it hasn't gone, and we're looking forward to turning up the amps and roaring out on the bike and getting the metal power from Priest out onto the world stages again very, very soon.
Yeah, and I'm very much looking forward to that. And, you know, I've got Richie Faulkner calling in 2 minutes, so I just wanted to say thank you for your time today. Absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Mitch. A pleasure speaking to you. Say hi to the Falcon for me from the Metal God. I'll be bumping into him in an airport in a few hours. So
and I'll wish him all
the best.
And I'll be coming down to that show in Montreal to see you. So it's,
fantastic. It's... Look forward to seeing you then, Mitch. Always a pleasure speaking to you.
You too. Bye-bye now.
See you soon. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.
And there you have it. That was my interview with Rob Halford. Great guy. You know, I've had a chance to interview him 4, 5, 6 times before. Always fantastic. One of the nicest people you'll ever talk to and ever meet. Before we get over to King Diamond, let me also mention that this interview is brought to you by the A World with Heroes Kiss tribute album and EP, both available on iTunes, with money raised going to the Vaudreuil-Soulanges Palliative Care Home. Let's just get right into our next interview, King Diamond. You know, King has been sort of on and off the metal scene for the last decade, having had heart issues and other things. And, now he's back. He's ready to rock. He's got his health in order. He's, jogging, walking, doing all that kinds of exercise. And Metal Blade gave him a 3-album deal. And of course, it's not what you think. It's not greatest hits, and a live album. It's actually 3 new albums. And so I caught up with King and had this incredibly insightful chat about what's going on, what went on, and what can we expect from him going forth. So why don't we just sit back and listen to King Diamond.
We are talking with King Diamond. Good day, sir.
Good day. How are you doing?
Good, good. It's a pleasure to speak with you, actually. You've been off the scene far too long, and it's nice to see you getting back in motion and getting the tour going and all that wonderful stuff. So, just pleasure to have you back.
It's a very good feeling, back from the dead, as they say. Literally.
Literally back from the dead.
Yeah. This was a couple of hours there. But, it's nice to have that second chance, and then, of course, you take advantage of it. If you want it enough, you have to want it, I guess, strongly to to get through all that stuff too. It's not easy, of course, but we've been at it now for a few years since that thing happened there, and that you will see and you will hear what has happened in those years, because this is the time to see and to hear King Diamond. I can guarantee you that for the voice is much better for my own part. The band is tighter, you know. The production is the best we've ever had. Our crew is fantastic, you know. It's the equipment we're using. I mean, there's so many things that are just gelling right, and it feels very good. We played the Wacken Open Air in Germany last month, you know, and man, amazing. I mean, it was supposed to be 80,000 people, I think, but there was 92, I was told. And we played Friday night, went on at midnight on the head the black stage, you know, and perfect, man. And it was great. I mean, it was really good sound, and the whole thing went well, you know. So, and it's that whole thing we're bringing over. Yeah, the entire production that can just fit in, you know. It's some places it's inches we're talking. Some promoters have been really going the extra mile to expand stages a tiny bit, but it's the whole thing. And one thing was really cool. It was already tested in some way how that all works, because I do like to read some of the comments, you know, after we played on Facebook and see what people say. And there was one specifically that really struck a nerve that had seen us play the indoor show in Berlin,
right?
In a theater there, you know, 4 or 5 days before Wacken. And we posted some photos from the Wacken show. We're going to post some more next week, probably. We promised that. So, but he saw those photos and he said, man, if it wasn't because I know better, I would say that's the show I was at in Berlin. It just looks the same. It's exactly identical. And so it'll be that too for the US with the whole production, the set list, everything, you know. So it's going to be really something special. You'll never forget it. That I can promise.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to the Montreal show on October 17th. But let me take you back to that day in 2010, where you have this heart attack. You know, we'll talk about the operation and the recovery, but at some point after that, as you go into 2011, did you go into a depression? Did you go into, that's it, I can't do this anymore? Or were you always...
No.
Okay.
No, it's I get a lot of... help from the wife. It was tough times. I mean, absolutely. It's you could get through the whole. I was happy to get a second chance. You know,
okay.
I mean, big time. Very tough to get through. You know, there's so many things you have to get used to and accept. You know, and now I have more metal in me because I have this braided metal rod going down the you know, under my skin. You know, in the chest, right down the middle. You know, that was used to tie the rib cage together again, so it could grow together again the right way. You know, I have barely a scar. You know, I have a tiny little scar that you notice. The rest of it, you don't really notice. And I was glued together, so I have no real stitches as such. You know, it's so of course you can see it, but it's not in any way hideous at all. You know, not at all. So it's there's a lot of things that was I don't know acceptable. Right. A lot of positive came out of it. You know.
Well, that's what I'm looking
to realize that my voice is so much better than it ever was a giant positive, and that was just because I stopped smoking. My wife stopped smoking as well. Then the nutrition class you go to, and my wife going way beyond that and going into practically becoming a nutritionist. She knows whatever is good for the heart and not. Right. And it's all that we do. I mean, I have my next checkup here next week, where they're gonna draw blood and check all the blood numbers and stuff, which has been amazing since it all happened, you know. And the doctors were asking, "What are you doing?" I'm doing what you told me to do. We walk these power walks 5 days a week, you know, 1.3 miles, and that's what they said. It's not longer because they said that's the good distance.
Right.
So we don't overdo things either. We do exactly what they said to do, you know. And we try to keep it up on tours as well, you know. I'll be taking walks on the tour, specifically the days we don't play, because when we play, it's definitely a workout, I can tell you. It's a big workout.
Yeah.
And it's an hour and a half up and downstairs to the second floor and all this stuff, you know. And But I'm not as tired after the shows as I used to be, even when I felt I was in good shape.
Right.
So it's different. I breathe different. I had to learn to breathe again, practically. You know, I mean, each breath after an operation like this, where they have collapsed your lungs, it hurts like hell. Every breath is a struggle in the beginning. And they're not going to send you home until you can blow a little bubble in a tube up to a certain level. You know, that's like their measure. Okay, you can breathe on your own without your lungs collapsing again, which they had done for the operation, you know. So those are the things that I know. There's a lot of ups and downs. It's tough to get through a lot of it. And rehab, you know, being home, I couldn't pour from a carafe with water, you know. Wow. I didn't have the power. Because you're cut open right down the middle. All your whole chest is separated in two suddenly, where you know you needed to be together to to do everything.
It's kind of useful, yeah.
Oh, you can't steer a car. You can't do anything. You know, I mean, you can't lift, barely can lift a glass full of water. You know, it's you suddenly start over. You know, and to walk, to get out of a chair, it's like everything is a struggle with help. You know, and then it's out and walk. After 10 days, I came home, and we actually had snow here in Dallas when I came back from that.
Very well.
And I had to walk there. He said, now you go home today. We finally let you home. You walk half a mile. Okay, you're joking, right? You do that, and you do that every day now until you come in a week back. And that day when you come back in a week, you do 1 mile. And I was thinking, how am I ever going to do that? And then I thought, looked at my feet and thought, I have no shoes that I can fit in.
Right.
Well, then walk in your socks or whatever. I mean,
get it done.
So you do it and you get it done, yeah. And but there's so many things and other thoughts you go through at the hospital and wake up. There's so much stuff, you know. But once all that super strong, tough, crazy stuff is over where you have to face death, you know, because when you go into that operation, you say your goodbyes, and it might be the last time you see your wife.
Yeah.
So you have to say goodbye in a way where you hope it's a good memory, you know. It's odd. It's really weird, you know. And you muster up your power, so you want to be strong for that operation, and you try and hope for the best, you know. And then just everything, the way my body looked when I came out of it, everything is so, I could sit and go into details, you know, but it's a long story full of details. I've done it other places, you know, and it is what it is, you know, but you come out psychologically afterwards. It's like you can feel a little bit like you don't belong, actually, because you could just as well not have been here.
Yeah, you know.
And you wonder, what would it have been like then? Then what would I be seeing my parents and my cats I don't have anymore that I look forward to see someday? You know, I don't have a religious belief. I never had that, you know. But that doesn't mean I'm not spiritual, you know. I do believe that I will see and recognize my parents, for instance, and my beloved cats that I don't have anymore in some shape or form, you know. I've seen so much occult stuff that I am convinced there is something.
Okay.
But I have not ever gotten for my own personal need enough of anything that would be a basis for a religious belief for me. You know, that's just the way things are. I never said there is nothing. How would I know? I can't say that if there is one or many or no gods. You know, I never claimed to say that or to know that, because no one knows that.
Right.
You might feel for yourself that you, but if it had been proved that there was either of those I mentioned, then we would all believe that if it was proven. But there's never been proof for everyone to see, you know. So that's why there are so many different directions that people believe in stuff. And I don't have the need to believe, you know.
Right.
House of God album is an example of very much where my thoughts are and all that stuff. Because, you know, you question things, and that's where the makeup came with the crosses both ways, you know. And you think about this person, I'm, you know, poking at this theory that if there was a Jesus, he might not have died on the cross. And there are some other people that speculate that he was taken across the sea to France. And, you know, this Rennes Le Chateau, the church there, there are lots of things and theories. And it's just interesting, you know. So going to that, and then the mind start, now I'm in this little story I created for myself here that others have also had something to do with. And you start thinking about... okay, if there now was this all this different stuff, imagine that church there and there's some entity in there, and you desperately, in my scenario, I couldn't leave that area only in a special way, and I would not have that option there. So I start questioning, okay, if there really is a God or something higher, yeah, but why can't you show yourself for us so we can stop killing each other over that dispute at least, you know? Yeah. And you don't get it. It's just like, what are you having fun with us? I mean, are we just your little toy soldier? Are we your Xbox or your PlayStation? Or what are we, you know, to you? I mean, or are we just nothing? Are we not important in the big picture? We like to make ourselves. We are the center of our own little universe, all of us, right? So we want to be important to feel that it's worth living, of course. But then there's those other thoughts that are maybe not so fun to think, that I think a lot all the time. I mean, what if that whole universe that we know is just a sand corn on a beach, you know? Then suddenly us in that one corner of sand on a beach is like, there is no way we can be important for the big picture. So we are just, what, nothing? But again, then you say like, well, you know, we don't know. Maybe we're not to know. So that's where I get back to my, I take what I get and make the best out of that, because I really don't know, and I've come to terms with it. I never know. I will not, for me personally, I will not know the truth until I'm somewhere else.
I got to say, you got a great song title there. Are We Your PlayStation? I mean, that's a great song title right there.
So it's we could be, you know. But it's like it, you know, you think these thoughts as well, of course, you know, when you come out of stuff like this, yeah. And I don't anymore take tomorrow for granted. I really don't, honestly. That I was where suddenly everything was turned around in one day, you know. In one day, I sat and wrote emergency will and shit like that, you know, because it was not ready to go.
Right.
Did not think of things and in that respect. And suddenly you're there, you go into surgery where you might not come out of it alive.
Yeah.
And you have to say, look at your wife in the eyes before they put you under and say, hey, I really want to come back because I don't feel like we are done here at all. And then you go in and hope for the best. And and then, you know, it gets 5.5 hour surgery. You know, they tell her, if you don't come out in that, it's not because something is wrong. It took 7.5 with me, you know. And there are certain things that we had after we lost our cat Magic. Managed to get 18 great years, which is a lot for a cat. She was a black cat, so she was, of course, called Black Magic, kind of. And something happened when we lost her that was totally supernatural. I'm not going to tell you the story now, but it was totally supernatural what happened. And there was a power to collect, we felt like. So we had these three circle necklaces made. You can touch when you stick your fingers in those circles. They feel very unique because it's not just circular rings. It's there's something else in there. And sometimes when I need a little extra, I go in there and I, you know, it goes up to the heart, and then the fingers go in there. And then I, because of what happened that day, I know that I can get a little extra. And I wanted to get that from that necklace, you know, for that surgery. And they told me, of course, I couldn't have it on. I was like, huh?
Yeah, you can't.
Well,
have
then that's it for me.
You know,
I was sure that then I wouldn't get through it. But then my wife said to me, don't worry, it's going to be good. Just take it off. It's fine.
Yeah.
Then she took hers off too. And they're identical, you know. And then she held them in her hands together during the whole operation, you know. And because we both believe in that chain.
Right.
And what was put into that, you know. And there are only those two there, special made, you know. So it's... but there's many things that I've seen so much stuff in my lifetime, you know, between heaven and earth. You know, there's the pictures you can find, one specific picture on our fan club, you know, the kingdiamondcoven.com.
Yep.
There are some, what do you call it, photo albums in right. there. And there is one from Sweden Rock Festival. At least there's a picture on one of them in there at the very bottom. Where you see this weird photo of our actors and me on stage during a song called Shapes of Black. We played on this too as well, where you only see her leg up to the thigh as if she's coming back in from another dimension. It's really weird.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, actually.
Oh, you are? Yeah. Okay. Well, if you notice, try and look at that. There's a, it looks like there's a candelabra right behind it, I think,
yeah,
with light in it. And you can almost see the light come around the top where the thigh is cut right through.
Hey,
like you would see a thing that would stand in front of a light source. It can often, the light comes around it that way. So it's really like she is not only that part is there. And there is supposedly a shadow of her leg there, but it's, that is not her leg. And if you can in any way zoom in on it, zoom in on the foot, it looks like a clone hoof to me. It's very strange, you know. And at that time, we used our lighting engineer wanted to use. It was a different lighting engineer than we have now, and he used a follow spot. I hate follow spots. I don't want follow spots on me. I want to blend into the surroundings to get the right feel. It was used there, and you can see there is a weak follow spot on there. You can see the outline on me. But there is no shadow from me in it. How come I have no shadow?
It's a very strange picture, yeah.
And the thing is that we uploaded it on Cube Upload, so everyone could see the settings. It was a Norwegian friend of ours called Håkon who took the photo with a digital camera. So you can't have double exposure. That's not possible. But we uploaded it on Cube Upload, so everyone could see the settings on the camera. They could see exactly what was going on. Then my wife came in to me and said, I got a strange, file name. It said, damn you. D-A-M-N-N and then a capital U. And I said, don't worry about that. There's no, you know, them, and as I like to call them, the powers of the unknown, whatever you want to label it. I said, they know that's full, what do you call it? Like the respect is mutual and massive, you know. So don't worry about that. But then we got an email from Cube Upload who said that we saw your interesting picture. And we also saw the file name it was given. We thought we should let you know that has never happened before. We just want you to know that our file names are always a combination of letters and numbers, so they can't create words.
Right.
We do not understand what happened here. Thought you should know. So okay. then we look at all this stuff here, and then I contacted. It was from Sweden Rock Festival. And I contacted the guy that one of the I think it's the editor actually from Sweden Rock magazine, and asked him if he could if there was anyone he knew of that had filmed the show that I could maybe see their footage, and he said, oh, there is a full very good bootleg of the whole show that I shouldn't let you know this, but I can let you know that, go and download it here, you know. I said okay, so we went and got it, and we were looking, we're sitting there, oh, so here comes maybe a truth, you know, but. Didn't expect what to see. And when we got close to that point, someone walked in front of the camera and stood there. You couldn't see anything.
Oh, it's too
blocked
bad.
It. I was like, what is too many coincidences here? I felt like being part of the Omen movie, you know, really. It was that kind of, this is just too much coincidence. But we've had that a couple of times. I mean, we have things in our house here. There are four spots in the house that are active sometimes. Not a lot. But not like the apartment I used to live in Copenhagen. They was haunted like you wouldn't believe. But so it's not anything uncommon, but it felt strange. I felt like I should call our actress there and tell her that they be extra careful the next couple of days because don't want you to lose a leg or something like that. I don't know what could happen here. But it's funny, you know, so yeah, take pictures when you when you see us. You know, you never know what might be on stage with us.
Yeah, I'd actually love to come out to the Montreal show and take pictures. Now, listening to your heart story, you and I both share Danish heritage, but I also had heart surgery in 2012. And
really?
Yeah, what? I had an ablation where they go in and they, I guess they cauterize the electrical misfirings that causes my heart to go into these arrhythmias and stuff. And I know the feeling. They said it was going to be a 2-hour operation. It ended up being 6. And you go in there and you think, that's it, folks, we're done. And when you come out, it's changed my attitude. Now, when everybody says you should do this or should do that, I just go, you know, shut up and do it. There's no more excuses. There's no more, I can't. It's Sunday. Shut up and do it. And it really changes your outlook. But let's get back to you because I know we have limited time here. 3-album deal with Metal Blade.
Yeah.
When does the first album come out? When does the last one come out? Is this something that we're going to go till 2020?
No time frames.
No time frames. Okay.
No. It's there's a lot of things that because it's not just you can say like okay we do this then we do this. There's been so much going on simultaneously lately that it's been really hard to it's like hey relax take it easy. There's time for it all, but do it right. No more pressure. You know, it's not necessary. It'll be done in good time. But we've done some really cool things. Right before we went over to Europe and did those, did Wacken and that stuff, my vocal studio got finished here. I have a vocal studio now at my house.
In Dallas.
So that's a huge thing. It was it took so long to prepare that, to get everything right and to execute it, you know. But now it's in there. There's a vocal booth from vocalbooth.com in Oregon, you know, with double sound insulated walls, floating floor, you know, it's the real thing. Like in any studio, it's the real thing. I have my Neumann microphone. I have the Sennheiser microphones for rehearsals, you know, and Presonus came in with the real tube microphone preamps with compressors and EQs in them and all the good stuff. I have Pro Tools in there now. You know, it's the real deal. I got from Oregon, from Portland, the Barefoot speakers in there. Sound killer. I never thought music could sound that amazing. They're hand-built, you know. One of the guys on the crew, they hand-built mine. I have two sets. I have one set, the small ones. There's 1,200 and some watts, the amps that are in them, you know. So they're powered amps or powered speakers. They have subwoofers on the side sitting in the cabinets on each side. It's amazing. So a small set in there and then a medium set, which is 2,500 watts in the living room. I could blow down my own walls if I wanted to, you know.
Yeah.
But they sound, they are completely 1,000% linear. They don't lie. It's unreal. You can hear everything. And so some things can really sound bad if it's not well done or someone didn't hear or do their albums on speakers that goes from all the way in the bottom up to the top. You can totally overdo the bottom if you can't hear it. Then you put it on a surround sound system for somebody, you know, and it's like, oh my God, man, what did we do? You know, we did something that we didn't know existed down there. We let it pass. And we've already used it now. It's already come to use some of this. I need to learn after we get back from the tour here. I'm going to rehearse in there because it's set up and I know how to set up for rehearsals now. But I need to get my hands on and learn it, you know. I've watched others do it, but I need to learn to do it myself. So that's it. And in that process, we have Kevlar, these special guitars. We're going to create the sound for the next albums and stuff, me and Andy together, you know. And he has the same speakers over in his studio. He has the same CD players. We got new CD players from NAD, you know, and all this stuff. He has the same preamp for the vocals, the same Neumann microphone. All these things are the same in his studio in Sweden. So when we go and mix at that studio, it'll be there in case we need to do something. If I need to add a vocal or change something, it's the same setup. We can do it, no problem, you know. So it's going to be so cool, man. I mean, I'll be in a situation where I'll never have to sing with a hoarse voice again.
Which is great.
I can go in there and sing at 4 in the morning if I want to, you know. I can do while I write the music, sit there and work on guitars and work on a verse and a chorus. And if I go in and test to sing to it and it doesn't feel good, I'll go out and work on it and change it until it feels perfect to sing to. I mean, it can't get any better. I can go in and do 40 voice choirs if I want to, because I have the time to do it if I feel that that's what I want to do. So I can approach certain things from new angles, you know, go in with a click track and work on a vocal piece, and then I can add music to that later. I mean, now we can paint more on the canvas that we couldn't do before, that is King Diamond. It's within the framework of King Diamond. It'll fit. All of it will fit. But man, if we can't do better next time, we failed.
You failed.
Because now we have the tools at our hands. I mean, this should have been done a long time ago. But again, it cost a lot, and you have to be in the right scenario to do it. Okay. And this was the time where it fell together the right way, you know. So I expect a lot of it. And I said we already used it a little bit. There's a thing coming out here in the end of November, which is very cool. Even though it might, when you first say, yeah, well, it's a double disc best of set.
Okay.
Oh, okay, another best of. Why not some new stuff? No, it's not taken away. We have gotten to know our new gear this way. Metal Blade got the chance from Roadrunner and, you know, Universal, Warner, that it is under now, to put out some of the old vinyls from Merciful Fate and King Diamond.
Right.
That was on Roadrunner. They also got a license now to, they might get the license for everything, you know, in the end. But to do a best of, for the first time, it's the band that decides the songs that goes on the best of. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's going to be great. We were never
involved in it. It was always over our head, you know. So for the first time, me and Andy could select the songs. And we decided to not just take what was available, but to let's use the new gear. Let's go in and let's go as far back as we can so we don't have these, because I'm not too fond of how they turned out. The Roadrunners were louder,
right?
These Goldmasters, but there's so much detail that got crushed in the process of compressing and limiting to get it loud, you know. And you don't need that today. You can do so many things. So we said, hey, let's go as far back as we can to get the details out again that are missing. And you'll hear details you won't believe. You will hear Welcome Home and Invisible Guest, for instance, with bottom end.
Wow.
I mean, that you will hear the songs from the latest album. They sound much better with the settings we came up with.
Is it just a question?
I told Andy, I don't care what the label wants, really. I do. But no matter what they say, I want you to do all the albums for me once we get time on the other side here with those settings. I want to hear the full Abigail album with those settings. Are you kidding? The one you can get now sounds so trebly, I can't stand my ears go into a banana flip. I don't know what happens inside of them when I hear that album. I think it's so sad because the album could be so good. And then I hear what we've done now and I'm like, I got to let people hear this. And what would be great to do down the road if people like it would be to exchange, not to go and spend again on the album. It's not like a remaster. I don't see it like that. It is, we went back to the old originals as far as we could get back, and then we enhanced them. And hear for yourself on the best of. It's really worth it, because you sit with your versions you have now, to just sit and compare those to what is on the best of is a trip. That is so cool to sit and listen to. And then later on, I would love for the label to go in and take the production masters and trash them, destroy them, and then have the new one, the new settings, and that be the albums from now on. Because then it's like, I think it is right for the albums to have them sound like that for new people who go and buy them. Or if anyone want to do anything, why don't you just go listen to your favorite album, those songs, what they sound like, compare that stuff. Then maybe it might be worth down the road if we do these full versions of them, because it's not been decided yet, but I would love to do it in between whatever else we do, you know, because I feel they deserve the right sound. And now I heard it, and then you can judge for yourself when you hear that album come out. It looks great. It sounds great. It's a great way to have it. The songs fit each other. Even though, you know, you jump from song 3 to song 8, it's not like you get shocked. Not at all.
Right.
Which was very surprising. But anyway, yeah.
When you go back and touch up these songs with Andy, do you add any guitar parts or anything? No, so it's the original tapes, but just with different settings. The Metal Blade 3-album deal, is it new album, new album, new album, or new album, live album, greatest hits?
No. Three new albums. Studio albums, yeah.
It's been 7 years.
Best of and lives do not count as albums in that.
Okay, so that's
if any gets done.
So that's good. That's good news for the fans. The last one is 2007, right? The last album, 7 years after going through what you went through with your health stuff, and then being sort of out of it for a bit. How do you approach the songwriting? Is there a fear? Is there, can I still do this, or is it like, come on, I got seven years of stuff backed up.
I can't wait because what happened with all this stuff, you know. I'll give you a few, my wife is making some quick food for me, so I'll give you a few more minutes because I actually have a half hour break now. So we should stop right now here, but I'll tell you this last thing here.
Okay.
The voice is better than ever. I mean, it's never been this good in my entire career. I never knew, man. I can't even picture in my head what it would have been like had I not smoked back when I was starting to sing.
Right.
I don't know how my voice would have been then. Now it is so much better than it ever was. Now that I don't smoke anymore. Oh. I haven't had one single drag since that thing happened. Neither have my wife, and we've had no trouble. I have no urges. It's gone. It's just not. It's as if cigarettes were never invented. Is how I feel. The nutrition, man, the food I eat, that my wife prepares, all of the fresh, and it's so healthy. It's all heart healthy. We went through the classes with the nutrition, but she went way above all this stuff and went out, and she's come up with so many things that are just so good. She's the one that discovered, hey, you can eat dark chocolate, you know, 70% and up. It's so good for your heart. It's the same as flaxseed, you know. It does all the same, clean out the cholesterol, and these things are just so cool, and it tastes great, man. Yeah. I can actually eat burgers still. We 98% fat-free meat, you know, and then in safflower oil, which has no side taste whatsoever, as if you did the greasiest burger in butter. It tastes better than that. Yeah. So it's not like you're losing out. I can't eat ice cream. I could eat an ice cream now and then if I wanted. I don't want to. I'm dead serious. The doctors asked me, how do you get those numbers? I said, I do what you told me. I walk exactly the distance you said is the best for my heart situation. And I do it the amount of times a week that you said. And I do power walk. I'm sweated down. When I do the show, it's 90 minutes up and down the stairs and all this stuff. You know, I am drenched afterwards, man. Yeah. But I'm not tired. I sit and talk on the way in the car back. I would sit there quiet and just catch my breath the old days.
And you should be tired, you know, as we get older. Well, it should be worse.
Everything. I should be asking the band, can you detune a little bit, please?
Yeah.
Can you have an extended drum solo
so I can take a break?
No. No drum solo at all.
Oh, thank God.
The new set has no drum solo.
Good.
When we play now, there is no drum solo. We took it out. Good. We had it before. It's not there anymore. It's all going full blast, you know, and it's, you know, all these things. It's like, so you can say there's some really bad that happened there. You get a second chance, you know, wake up calls, like you, exactly like you said, also, absolutely, exactly that too. And also I don't take for granted that I wake up tomorrow. That's why, like you said, you just do what you can get something out of it, now. So, for us, it's like, if you have never seen King Diamond, or if you've seen it before, it doesn't matter. This is the best time you could ever see us, hear us. We sound better than ever. We have the best crew in the world, man. We the best sound engineer, the best all of them. The sound engineer is Pontus Norgren from the guitars from Hammerfall. He's a mind-blowing sound engineer. He has brought out the old vintage King Diamond sound, so that what we do on stage, you hear it now perfect. I mean, it's amazing. It's such a, when we go on stage, we are so confident it almost stinks. It's so bad. I mean, it's not a big head, it's confidence, because they do such a job for us that we know everything is what it should be when we go on stage. Now, the old cremation is back, you know, we do the coffin again. Dr. Landau was there, Samael the priest is there, you know, grandma is there in a wheelchair. She has an extra role in the cremation part, you know. The puppet for the puppet master is coming alive, and the several backdrops that change throughout the set, it just changes the whole look of the set. The Baphomet symbol has been refurbished, you know, so have the crosses of that. They look better than ever. We did that for Wacken, you know. So all these things, the Baphomet symbol will disappear at some point, because it had to make the one of the new backdrops. The one of the backdrops is actually the front cover of the Best Of album, you know.
Yeah.
So that's up there. But it looks great. It looks so weird. There's that gigantic version of me up there, you know, that is painted, that looks really weird. When we start playing At the Graves, you know, that song, we play the whole song. That's the longest King Diamond song we have, you know.
Yeah.
And I sit down, and the intro is playing for that song. Sitting down on the platform, and you see this big version of you on top, it really makes me look like a little kid sitting there, you know, in some strange way. There's so much that is just cool in this. The lights we have with us, you know, we used to have these extra lights with us to really enhance the 3D feel of our production set, you know. But now for Wacken, we exchanged all that, upgraded it to very light, so it all can move and all this stuff. And it's so cool. We built some new things on each side of the crosses, on the side of the stage, new stands for putting lights in that can then sit and move there. It's so cool, man. It's so unique. That's why I know you'll never forget it once you've seen this stuff here. You probably won't see things that big in these theaters under normal circumstances. We can just squeeze it in, you know. But it works, man.
Definitely looking forward to the show in Montreal. Last thing, because I know you're on a break and you're supposed to have supper here. Merciful Fate, finished, come again, still in hibernation.
I mean, you never know. I mean, there's a bigger chance of doing something now that I have a vocal studio here, you know. It makes things easier. I would never say no for that, you know. I mean, if we ever do something again or play some shows, you know, the others, some of them have jobs, you know. It's hard to get away from and lose all benefits and whatever else they have with their families and stuff, you know. So it's it would be cool to do if we ever did something. It'll never interfere with King Diamond. I would never sacrifice King Diamond for doing some Mercy, you know. Right. That's not gonna happen. But there will be places where there's time, I'm sure, you know. And now that we have this here, it's not like it makes it easier. If you wanted to do, Hank has talked so much about that in for so many years now. Man, I'm ready to do the masterpiece, you know. It's like, yeah, so am I. But we need more people, you know. And it would be great if we did it, if we could do it with the originals, I think, you know, because that would be the way to go. And also, if we played a couple of shows, wherever it would be, you know, to go back and do the mini LP and the two Melissa and Dom Radio, and do that, and that would be it.
That would be fantastic. In fact, there's a festival in Montreal called Heavy Montreal, and that would be the perfect place for Merciful Fate and King Diamond to come and play and do it all over again. I think it would be ideal.
But it's got to be right, you know. It's got to be done right and pro. I will not do anything that is half-assed, you know. It has to be really, and that's the others would have to be in on that it has to look right. It has to be right. It has to sound right. It has to be done and prepared right, not just let's go play a backline show here.
No, it's gotta be.
Either you do it right or you don't go in and just, that would be disgracing it. I will never do that.
Absolutely. October 17th, Montreal. October 18th in Toronto. King, a pleasure. I hope to get back there and shake your hand and say
awesome.
Thank you.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And thank you for taking the time. I could go on for another half hour, but I know that you have...
Oh, that's us to talk about, yeah.
I didn't get into Metallica. I didn't get into what the new album's going to sound like, but we'll do it again.
Yes.
Thank you. Tack, absolutely, as they say.
You are welcome.
Bye-bye.
Big one.
Tack.
Okay, take care, man. Bye-bye.
Well, there you have it, folks. That is what I call a full show. I mean, Rob Halford, the metal god, and of course, the king, King Diamond. You know, listen, an episode where you have a king and a god, that pretty much, that's as good as it gets. So folks, check out Redeemer of Souls by Judas Priest. Go see them on tour. Catch the King Diamond tour as well. And of course, I'm sure like me, you're all looking forward to new music by the king. Thank you.